Saffron Skies and New Beginnings by Rita Bradshaw. Read by Kate O'Kello. For our 6 precious grandchildren, who are all growing into the most amazing, funny and wonderful people. Sam and Connor, Georgia and Emily, and Reese and Chloe. I hope you know that you're all the light of my and Pappy's lives, and that we love you all the world and bags of sugar. And my lovely granddogs, Lily, Topsy and Yoshi, and the much-missed Bailey. All very different, but with the most quirky personalities and loving ways. Each a real little blessing with 4 paws, as is our new arrival, Angel, who's simply perfect. Prologue. Belinda stood in front of the full-length mirror, looking at her reflection. Her fine lawn nightdress hinted at the curves beneath, and she'd brushed her hair for some time, so that it fell in a shining silky curtain down her back, rather than plaiting it, as she usually did at bedtime. She was trembling, and she bit down hard on her bottom lip, her pale and somewhat babyish face staring anxiously back at her, and her deep blue eyes wide. She had to do this, she told herself, and tonight, every day, every hour was crucial. Her fingers were joined so tightly at her waist that her knuckles gleamed white, and she slowly relaxed them, taking several long, deep breaths. Everything, her marriage, her life, her future, rested on her succeeding, and she'd waited too long already. If she'd been thinking straight, she would have done this weeks ago. She had to seduce her husband into sleeping with her, and in a way that made it seem it was his idea. Part 1. The Secret, 1918. Chapter 1. 7 weeks earlier. Belinda stood gazing at the glittering, noisy throng in the ballroom. Her eyes lifted for a moment to the glass chandeliers, which seemed like a host of twinkling stars, before returning to the dancers. The orchestra, on a raised balcony at the end of the vast room, were in full play, and many of the couches and velvet seats arranged against the walls were empty. There was a feverish gaiety pervading the atmosphere tonight, she thought, as she watched a group of ladies she vaguely knew pass her, laughing and talking loudly, in what she considered a most unseemly manner, and taking great gulps from their wine glasses. Of course, everyone would be excited with it being Armistice Day and the end of the war, when the guns had boomed out all over the country at 11 o'clock and the church bells had rung. Crowds had poured out of the offices and shops and factories to sing and dance in the streets. Archibald had been in Newcastle, and he'd returned saying strangers were kissing in doorways and he'd been grabbed and hugged by several folk on his way to the railway station. He didn't hold with such behaviour, and had appeared distinctly ruffled when he'd come home. She glanced at her husband, standing stiffly at the side of her. Archibald didn't care for dancing either, or a host of other what he called frivolities. She rather suspected that that was one of the reasons her parents had pressed her to marry him, her father being a minister of the cloth. She had been brought up strictly, she supposed, but had enjoyed her childhood, in the big rambling vicarage with her brother and sisters. And as her father had been wealthy in his own right, they had wanted for nothing and had some influential friends in County Durham, Archibald being one of them. It was 5 years after his first wife had died that he'd asked for her hand in marriage, and her parents had immediately given their consent. She'd had very little to do with it. The fact that Archibald was 30 years older than her hadn't concerned them. It was an important step up the social ladder. Her father had informed her coldly when she tentatively mentioned Archibald's age. And she ought to be grateful that a fine man like Mr. McFadyen had noticed her. The gratefulness on her part had lasted for a while after the wedding and honeymoon in Paris,